From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made tonight at the Panera Theater stage at RIT. That's where the first ever deaf black production of the August Wilson play Fences will be performed. The Pulitzer Prize-winning play tells the story of Troy Maxson, a former baseball star who was denied a chance to play in the major leagues because of the color of his skin. His son has his own athletic dreams, and Troy, in his adulthood, navigates discrimination at his job. And Fences forces audiences to face some uncomfortable truths about segregation and racism. And through the Maxson family struggle, audiences learn about how black families are often characterized. Critics say it is one of the most powerful stage dramas of contemporary American theater. The upcoming performances by actors at the National Technical Institute for the Deaf will be accessible to deaf and hearing audiences. We'll get a preview this hour and discuss the importance of this particular performance and of Wilson's play. This conversation, we should tell you, is being streamed on Facebook Live with captions, so you can watch it as well. Just go to WXXI News on Facebook, and we'll be glad to join you there. I'd like to welcome our guests in studio this hour. The director of Fences and an interpreter as well is Luann Haggerty. Luann, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks, Evan. It's a pleasure to be back. I appreciate you having us on the show.
Also with us is Aseon Owens, speaker for the role of Troy. Welcome to Aseon.
Thank you, Evan. I didn't know y'all was filming. This knows.
Aseon is telling us that if you're watching on Facebook Live, it's a dry early spring day, just dealing with a nosebleed.
The show must go on.
The show must go. I think you look great. Show Thank must you. Go on. Thank you for being here. Mark Juan Holmes is a signer for the role of Troy. Mark Juan, welcome to you.
Yes, I am the role, and I'm happy to be here. I'm very excited and motivated for tonight's opening night.
All right.
I hope to see a lot of people tonight.
Malik Paris, signer for the role of Lyons. Malik, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right. So Luann just mentioned, and you just heard Mark Juan and Malik talking about what's going on tonight. So you've got, I think, what, four chances? Is that right, Luann?
That's right.
So tell us about when people can see this historic production.
Tonight at 7:30, tomorrow at 7:30, Saturday at 7:30, and Sunday at 2.
Okay, and where again?
This will be at the Panera Theater, RIT campus, and the National Technical Institute for the Deaf, the Panera Theater. So if you're looking around campus, you know, college campuses are notoriously complicated, but there's really only one loop. Follow signs to the Panera Theater.
All right. I also want to say hello to Danica Zielinski, who is in studio with us as an interpreter. Great to have Danica. And in a moment, I think we're going to welcome Gigi Gano, who's speaker for the role of Rose.
Wonderful.
Right. Very good. So we're going to make sure if you're watching on Facebook Live, it's a lot of coordination. And Luann, for a performance like this, tell me about some of the aspirations you have to do this and maybe some of the challenges as well, technically, to get this performance to the level that you want it.
Well, to start, I'm a professor at NTID, so some of these people are my students. I chose the play because I saw a lot of talent that really hadn't had a chance to shine on the big stage, on the Panera stage in the past. We always cast non-traditionally, but we have not done a full black cast show on the Panera stage in 50 years. We've been around for 50 years. So that became very important to me to do that. One of the challenges that I was surprised about, actually, was being a white woman directing a black play that is really kind of focused on a male character. I mean, the center of the family is Troy Maxson, and he's the dad. But I had just thought that a woman's perspective would bring in stronger relationships, stronger thoughts about family. That seems to be a key theme in the play. Hadn't really thought that much about my cultural difference because I have done many full black plays before. I've done Emperor Jones and won awards in New York City. Did Raisin in the Sun, won a Lorraine Hansberry comment. It's an award, but it was they call it a comment. But August Wilson actually was trying to promote more work for black directors. So he had made a public statement saying that he preferred to have black director for this play, for Fences. So to address that, I called his widow to be sure that she knew and everything was good with that. And she informed me I'm probably not the first white person to direct the play. Mm-hmm. I might be the first woman, not sure. And I also had to ask because we adapted the play for deaf culture. There are a lot of times in the play where there are phone calls or things that are very hearing culture. In fact, Malik's character is a musician. In the 1950s, a deaf musician was possible, or hard of hearing musician, but not really promoted in deaf culture. At that time, music was considered a very hearing culture thing. So to be able to adapt the play for deaf culture, to be able to appreciate and honor black culture, the way I address that is I tend to be a very collaborative director. I always have what I call a posse. You know, I guess that's really, you know, your crew or your support staff, assistant director, stage manager. But I also tend to have interpreters. I invite people into rehearsal. My rehearsals tend to be open. And for this play in particular, I was asking people of that generation who are black and deaf to come and give feedback on the sign style, the relationships, things that I couldn't know personally. You can research, but you know, there's a tangible feeling when it's really in you and it's really yours as opposed to just studied. So I wanted it to have that authenticity. And if I couldn't bring it, I could certainly find the people who could bring it. So we had our support staff, people coming in. These guys had to get used to visitors through rehearsal all the time. We had visitors from Japan. We had C.J. Jones, who was in Baby Driver, so he black deaf celebrity. He came and visited rehearsal. And then, of course, my colleagues and staff from NTID were very, very supportive. J.T. Reed was there the whole time giving ASL coaching and feedback. Joe Hill, whose PhD is studying black sign language, came supported. Alicia Allen, I could go on. So this was really a community effort and a collaborative effort that I led and I proposed, but I certainly wasn't the last word on.
My understanding is that Wilson's widow has been pleased with what you put together. At least there is some support there, yeah?
Oh, yeah, very mm-hmm. much. There is one scene that was a phone call, and in the script you only hear one side of the phone call. So I had asked, can I add a character so we can see that conversation? So I had to send pages for approval and things. But there really was no obstacle to that. It was just more respect and permission and contact communication.
And I'm going to turn to the performers in just a moment, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the structure of this performance? Because, you know, for example, Acyon is the speaker for the role of Troy. Mark Wan is the signer for the role of Troy. Tell me about that structure for the audience.
Well, this is my favorite way to direct. I love to have two realities happening at the same time. I love to be able to show how easily two cultures that seem to be in opposition function so smoothly and in concert with each other. So, yeah, actors, their egos, you know, they can be funny that way. Mine, big, I know, I am experienced, I have resume. But in this situation, the actors really do have to be open to sharing the role, sharing the ideas, blending their understanding of the character so that they become one character in reality, in spirit, I guess. from a hearing perspective, from a deaf perspective. So what you'll see physically is we have neighbors. The Maxson family does not live on an island alone in isolation. They're surrounded by a community, and the voice actors are their neighbors physically. So you would see Aesyon on stage, sitting in on the front stoop of the neighbor's house, and Marquand would be center stage. But the two of them, you'll notice their body language, their physicality, their gestures often will almost be parallel. It's almost dance-like. It's very pretty to watch.
Well, we happen to have both Marquand and Aesyon in studio, the signer and speaker for the role of Troy. So let's start with them. Marquand, for you, how successful do you feel that the blending of these, essentially two people kind of blending in the way that the director talked about, how comfortable do you feel with it, and are you ready for tonight?
Yeah, just want to say, yeah, I'm ready. Sure, I'm ready. Bring it on. But as a first time, you know, coming into rehearsal, it was a bit awkward at the beginning because as a deaf person, I'm inviting a hearing person into my world so where he can learn my culture, learn to gesture, learn to communicate and sign. It's the first time for some of our voice actors to see that and have to learn how to work together to try to match and blend. It can be a little frustrating at first. I'm signing, he can't read me, and he's already spoken the line, and he doesn't understand why. And we keep explaining that ASL is different than English, and so the timing will be different. So we have to figure out, do I have to go faster? Do I have to go slower? Does he have to speak faster or slower? And so far, we've been pretty successful about matching and blending the two languages, the two versions of the character. And I'm very happy to invite somebody. And he's been really great about learning and taking my teaching of sign language, too.
Aesyon, how do you feel about it?
He says that now. He didn't say that at practice. No, I'm just playing. For me, it has been very difficult, but the reason being, it's a language that I would love to learn, but I don't know it right now, so I'm steady learning bit by bit. So I've been really studying his movements and how he handles things, and then I try and interpret it the best way I can. So the story by itself is beautiful, and the idea of turning that one character into two and showcasing how, in a way, it can affect both sides, regardless if it's the hearing side or the deaf side, it's still something that affects you, and how we both can go through it, it's beautiful. I love it, and it's really helped me a lot to grow as far as a performer, so I'm honored. And he's done a great job. You know, we worked together. It was difficult at first, but I think we're pretty much on the same page as far as, you know, how to do it, how we think Troy Maxson would be, you know?
Yeah, let me ask both of you. I'll start with you, Aesyon. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a Pulitzer-winning play. This is a historic work in the American canon for many reasons. But there's still a good number of people who will come to see it over the next 4 days who have never seen it. What was your first experience with Fences?
My first experience with Fences, honestly, I saw the movie and I didn't understand it. I didn't respect it the way it was supposed to be.
Recently or
years ago? Before this play. Yeah. Before this play, I came across the movie because it was a Denzel movie. So I wanted to see it. Everyone was talking about it. And then once I actually had the opportunity to play Troy, Luann gave me a copy of the movie and she said, watch it. And I watched it well over 30 plus times. And I've been reading the script, and then I've been researching the late, great August Wilson and learning more about him. And now I take it more so as an honor that I'm able to share this role with all these great people, James Earl Jones, all these people who've done this stage play. I want to make sure that my part is as magnificent as theirs was, but also showcase that I keep holding my head up for a reason. Also showcase that it's not an exception. This is an add-on. This is something that you're going to say, wow, the deaf community did this and took it to a whole nother level. You know? So that's something I'm really looking forward to. I'm pretty excited about it.
Mark Juan, what was your first experience with Fences?
Yeah. Well, my friend's in Wisconsin. I grew up in high school. I went to a hearing mainstream high school. And Richard King's, yeah. So I go. I wanted to work with a performance teacher. And first time I was acting, performing. And we set up a couple of scenes from Fences. And my best friend was acting too. And he played the role of Corey, my son. It's Cortez is his sign name. And the two of us played together. And the teacher brought that play. We just read the book. We'd never heard of it. It's the first time we even read the play or tried to follow lines. First time we were acting. And we didn't do the whole play. We just, you know, sections and selections. And Cortez was here. He hears a little more than I do. He's a little hard of hearing more than I do. But we were signing it. And he knew that the play had been talked about. He knew it was famous. And so he let me know. And when we got here and I knew they were doing it and heard this was going to be the first deaf black play on the Panera Theater, gave us the opportunity to shine and show my deaf black community that we are equal and we can go. We can really break down that cycle to let people know. Yeah, break the glass ceiling, Malik said.
Yeah.
Mark Juan and ASEAN, Mark Juan, I'll start with you on this question. You know, Troy is obviously huge to the plot of this, and there's been a lot of speculation about the different aspects of this character. It's a complex character. The expression of love is complex. This is by no means a perfect character. He experiences some hard developments with family and the relationships there. How did you try to bring your performance, your take on Troy? And if you could, how do you view Troy in terms of that complexity of character? You know, because sometimes I think we're too interested in good versus bad as opposed to the real human nature of a character.
How I perceive myself as Troy, that's perspective. Well, when I was first working and analyzing the role, performing it, trying to put that character on, I pulled out my own experiences with my family as a deaf person. My father, where was my father? So I'm kind of looking at it from a black man's perspective. And as a father, and father trying to take care of them. And I took it into me and my own experiences, looking back to really deeply ingrain myself in the characters. So it's not just the words on the page, but it's my personality too. How my family taught me, how those emotions connect across the stage. I mean, there was one scene in rehearsal, I actually cried. I broke down for a minute. I was so in the moment. I put myself in the shoes of Rose when she was yelling at me, and it totally made me emotional. And I have to think about where I'm going and where I'm from and how it connects with my own heart.
ASEAN, how do you view the challenge of Troy given the complexity of this character? I mean, it's a great character.
Yes, it is. It is. My grandfather played for the Negro Leagues. God bless the dead George Owens. He played for the Negro Leagues when he was younger.
Wow.
And I had the pleasure of talking to him about it before he passed. Ironically, I ended up playing Troy Maxson, you know, so I took that also and thought about it and used that, you know, just that little bit of understanding about how it felt to play and be a part of a team and have that dream and not really go where you want it to go. And then for me, I started thinking as far as Troy isn't the villain. Troy is just troubled. He's very troubled. He wants to do the right thing, but his life and his experiences have made him so hard that he doesn't know how to show the love to his son that he needs to. He doesn't know how to help his son follow his dreams because for his whole life he's been told, you can't do it, don't do it, you're not fit. So anytime his son would talk about it, he would feel the same way, like, well, what about me? I don't do it. Don't bother, you know? So it was kind of difficult for me to tap into that. But just recently, ironically, like 2 days ago, I talked with Luann, and she told me don't perform Fences as if Denzel or anyone else would perform Fences. Perform Fences as you would perform Fences. Bring out that part of you that feels that hurt and that pain sometimes. So I was able to touch into that, and I think it's going to be a great show. Come check out the show.
One more question on, because we could probably do the whole hour or the whole day on Troy.
Oh, yeah, we can. It's so much.
Yeah, probably.
But, you know, producer Megan Mack points out that August Wilson himself, growing up, was accused of plagiarism. Mm-hmm. It was doubted by his own teacher that you could produce something this powerful, this strong. And you can't help but sort of feel the echo of Troy, the way society doesn't allow you to achieve certain things or doubts that you belong in certain spaces. And I wonder, you know, Acyon, is there something you want the audience to take from this, either this performance or as Troy or the whole show?
Well, it's a double answer in that question. For one, I was doubted myself as being an actor because I don't fit the mold, as I was told, by family. You know how I feel. I love my family, but, you know, everyone has that doubt. I've had that doubt from friends. I've had that doubt from strangers because I don't fit that role. And here I am. You prove against the doubters that you can do it. So what I want the audience to take from it primarily is don't give up. If you go out swinging. Go out, hit for that 450 feet, you know? Because that's all it is to you. All life is a curveball in the outside corner. Make sure it's waist high above the plate where you can get the meter to bat on it, and goodbye. That's how it is, you know?
Mark One, what would you like the audience over the next 4 days to take away from this performance of, as Troy, but also from Fences?
Mm-hmm. Like you said, many times in performance, Troy always says, I had a better life for my son. I don't want you to do what I'm doing. He says, teach me. I want you to go further than I was able to do. I want you to be able to go higher and have higher goals. Go as far as you can. Try to reach outside of your reach, and maybe you'll even be able to hit that goal. Don't limit yourself. You have to think so that you can become all you can be.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about a historic performance of Fences that is coming your way. It is a performance not only led by the people in the studio, but a cast that is, well, I'll let Luann tell you. Luann Haggerty is the director of Fences. This is historic, and for our listeners jumping in here, tell them when and where they can see it over the next 4 days and why it's historic.
Over the next 4 days, you'll be able to go to the RIT campus, go to the National Technical Institute for the Deaf, NTID, the Panera Theater, and tonight, tomorrow, Saturday, 7:30, Sunday at 2, you'll be able to see the production of August Wilson's Fences, and it's performed in both sign and spoken word, and performed, not just recited. Full set, full costumes, projections, lights. It's an amazing high production value show that is very well done. I know I'm the director, so I probably do have a bias there, but I am from New York, so I can be kind of cynical too. So I'm being straight with you. It's historic because in the 50 years that NTID has been around, we have cast non-traditionally, and we have had small shows that went into our lab theater that were full black cast. We won an award when I brought the production of Emperor Jones to New York City. We won Best Overall Showcase in New York City that year. We won a commentary, an award from the Lorraine Hansberry Foundation for our production of Raisin in the Sun, but they were small. They were in the lab theater, and we toured them to New York City. We have never in 50 years had a full black cast show on the Panera stage. Also, the translation into sign is a historic moment. It's not only just the language, we've also translated it into deaf culture. The Maxson family is a deaf family living in a hearing world. So the isolation you might see in an average production of the one family and the focus of the show and the set is on the one family, and you don't really see the neighborhood in this situation. You do see the community, and you see how they are contained within that hearing world. So the historic approach, the artistic approach, the connection to deaf culture, the fact that there has never physically been an all-black cast on the Panera stage is all first time. So that would make it historic.
So you've got a chance to see it. And again, the opening tonight is what time?
7:30.
7:30 tonight, if you want to be there for the opening and to see history. We're going to take our only break of the hour. And as we go to break, I want to let our audience know one more time. This conversation is being streamed on Facebook Live with captions. So you can watch as well. You can follow along with us on the WXXI News page on Facebook. So we're glad to join you there. We're glad you're joining us wherever you are as we talk about this performance of Fences. You heard from Acyon Owens and Mark Juan Holmes about the role of Troy. You're going to hear from some of the other cast members when we come back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, if New York State legalizes marijuana, Governor Cuomo says the profits should go largely to communities that have been disproportionately impacted by arrests and incarceration. So how can that be assured? We'll explore it. In our second hour, how do educators determine which students are gifted? Are there biases that come into play? Talk with you Friday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're receiving some feedback from our listeners and viewers on Facebook, Facebook Live. Nikki, watching on Facebook Live, says she's so proud of the theater family. Please come to the show. You will love the show.
That's from Nikki.
There you go. It sounds like Nikki's getting some love from the people in the theater here. Peter on Facebook Live says, what a unique theater experience. So thank you for some of the feedback there. If you're joining us on the WXXI News Facebook Live, on Facebook page and Facebook Live there. We've been talking to some of the performers in this truly historic performance of Fences. And just to sort of reset for you, if you are someone who has heard of Fences but has never seen it, I will briefly ask Luann Haggerty, the director, to kind of, once again, kind of set the scene of the story of Fences, written in the 1980s, set in the 1950s. Go ahead.
Set in Pittsburgh, 1958. This is the story of a family, of the Maxson family. The head of the house is Troy, and he has had a tough life. He's had to separate himself from his own family, moved to Pittsburgh expecting a better life, and actually found that it was harder. But despite all of the dings and bangs of that life hands you, he got sent to prison, and there he discovered baseball and became a baseball star, where he met his wife Rose. Rose is like the glue of the family. She's strong and grounded, and is able to, as Bono, his best friend, says, she'll keep you straight. She will pull you back and keep you straight. Lyons is Troy's son, but he's a son from a relationship he had before prison. So his mom is not Rose. But he wants a relationship with his dad real bad. So he comes up with reasons to show up. He asks for $10. He visits all the time. And he's followed his dream of becoming a musician, which probably makes Troy crazy because his dreams were shattered. He has a now son with Rose who has dreams of becoming a football player. And that makes Troy crazy too, because that dream is so close to his own of being a baseball player. And he just doesn't believe that white culture, as he says, the white man is going to let him actually succeed at that dream. So he would prefer to pull him back now than let his son break his own heart. Rose is able to keep everybody together. It's her goal to build the fence around the house. And as Bono says, some people build fences to keep people out, but Rose builds fences to keep people in because she loves them all so much that she wants to protect them. In the process of the play, we find out that Troy has also been having an affair. His mistress has died, and she's left a baby, and Rose is left with the decision, does she raise another woman's child? And she is so generous that she does take in that child and raise her as her own.
I'm wondering if you're going to give it all away.
Well, right now, I'm just trying to hit all the characters. And the thing is, you would watch this story and you would think it's a dysfunctional family, and, you know, our modern life, we think that it's, I don't know, expected to see the negative, the negative, the negative. But through his, Troy's control of the family, they do all actually bond. So the end of the play is uplifting. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well.
Sorry.
No problem at all. Let's turn to Malik Harris, who is the signer for the role of Lyons. Malik, I'll start by asking you what I asked the other performers. What do you remember as your first experience with Fences?
For Fences, I was excited to have an all deaf black cast in general for any play, but Fences is such a well-known. Putting on this character onto myself, trying to find his real life in his everyday, taking steps, finding small bits, finding that identity, both as a deaf and a black man, mainstreamed in, really hit me. Because August Wilson, the writer, I have watched other versions of the play, and I've also watched other plays of his, and it's very important that he emphasizes the black community. But for us, as a deaf black cast, we want to teach our children, our generation, to grow and develop and learn what their own identity is. And that applies to this production strongly.
We've talked a little bit about the structure of the performance and the importance of making sure it comes off as seamless for the audience. Do you feel prepared? How do you feel about it going into opening night?
Oh, yeah. I'm really ready. The blend and everything is just so smooth, yeah.
Tell us about Lyons.
Lyons is a musician, and that is his goal, to have his livelihood as a musician. And Troy goes, why do you want that? Your dreams are going to be destroyed. And of course, I have to struggle. I mean, the other side of being a musician is you might have a gambling problem. I'm not sure I'm addicted to gambling. I'm just want easy money. I want an easy way to get money so I can focus on the music and my wife. And so whatever happens, even jail, my main goal is music. I need it to live. It's my inspiration. It's the reason I get up in the morning, and without it, I'm stuck. The music keeps me alive, inspires me every day. So perspective, it's completely different than my own personality. I'm very low-key, calm, you know, flexible person. I love all kinds of characters. I like to analyze the characters, see what the key is. You know, Troy and Lyons, a little bit opposite. He's very angry and serious. And Lyons is very easygoing, kind of happy. He's just trying to find a connection with my dad, you know. And, of course, he was in jail during the years when I was growing up. So that kind of applies to my true life situation because my father wasn't around. And so I feel that there is a little bit, a part of Lyons inside of me, too.
Fences won August Wilson his second Pulitzer Prize in 1987,
wow.
Considered the most successful play in the Pittsburgh cycle of 10 plays, which, of course, portrays the struggles of black Americans across 10 decades. And, Malik, I wonder if the genius of of Wilson is, at least in part, being able to create a play like this that is very clearly a layered script about the struggles of African Americans, but it's also universal in so many ways. People can relate to having parents doubt them, or a father who doesn't want you to do something, or people around you trying to convince you, don't waste your time with music or sports or whatever it is. And I wonder if in your own life, as not just a black man, but a deaf man, if you have run into people telling you, hey, I don't know if this is for you. I don't know if this is the right idea. Maybe you should not go in this direction.
Yeah, really?
The thoughts of my heart, my spirit, my life. I have always wanted to become an actor. That's my goal. So whatever people have tried to say to oppress me or hold me down, you can't, or obviously you're not the right type. I go, okay, that's fine. I just try to explain a little bit from my own heart and my own experience. I do videos. I create my own work if I have to. I try my best to audition and be involved in other productions. I mean, even if it's not a deaf production, I'll give them my resume and show up at the audition. It's up to them to hire me or not. You never know what connections they may have who will come back to me and connect with me, and I'll end up with a job later on. I'm also a gay man. So it's like double, triple perspectives on that. But this character's a straight guy. And like the other characters, I like the challenge. I like, bring it on. Bring on that challenge. If you think that I can't do it, bring it on, and I can prove it. So I think I can change perspectives if you see me. You want to see, you know, what I can do? I'll improvise it. I'll audition. I'll show it. You'll see who I am. You'll see how much potential skill I have, and I'll throw it. I'll throw it into the ring and see. I try to keep an open heart and mind on that.
And Malik, I certainly appreciate you describing how even if there's an audition that isn't for a deaf character, you'll show up, see what happens, you know, talk to the people in charge and see mm-hmm. if there's a way to make that role work. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask in particular you and Marquand about the broadening of opportunities or not, because, you know, just to kind of take one example of how society can struggle with this when we kind of go outside of what we think is quote unquote typical. I think the world had a panic attack when Idris Elba was in the running to play James Bond, you know, a black man playing James Bond, which, you know, to many theater goers sounded like a great choice, but there was still part of the population that couldn't make sense of it. And so it sounds like it's a process of just imagining more broadly what a role can or should be. Do you see it happening slowly? Do you see it happening at all? I mean, do you feel like doors are opening, or is it still slow?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. There is an impact that is happening across. There's a development of characters, the analysis of characters more, evaluating the plays. Suppose the director hasn't thought of me, but he sees me, and he sees I have the feeling, and he might give me more of a chance. More opportunities are happening. I do believe that times have changed. People are more willing, and you have to be willing to change. You have to be willing. So for me, I read a lot. For me, I watch a lot of things. Every day I'm watching people and analyzing their movements, watching their gestures, knowing who they are. How do they eat? How do they walk? You got to be ready, you know? So I have to know what they're doing. I have to learn every day so that I'm ready when the opportunity presents.
Okay. Marquand?
For me, like he said, every day there are opportunities to perform. The door has to open. If I have to open the door, maybe it'll let other people in. If I open the door, other black deaf people will have the opportunity to grow. It's hard to grow and develop through and feel the discrimination and that for myself, and that causes some anxiety, but I just tell myself to go ahead. I always like to test. Is the fit good? Is there something new that I can try? Can I improvise something on stage? Or whenever I'm performing, I try not to be me. I try to be Troy. I can separate myself for a minute, become another person, have another dream, and avoid the things that are going on in my personal life. Put that aside and feel something outside myself. I can always surprise myself, learn something new about myself, get involved, and really have an impact. Maybe it's a small impact, but if I can inspire people, myself, just through watching the play, you know, come and see a deaf black for the first time. It's not just that, but learn from us how to grow and develop your identity, find your passion, look to your future, and believe in those good opportunities. And yeah, I like what he said, Malik is saying. Good example. It's not even just for me. It's for the black deaf community to be able to see, you can. Oh, I can. Yes, of course you can. Because sometimes people don't give themselves opportunities because they don't believe in it. But as a deaf black actor, you've got to jump in so you have a future. And just to end with that, a black deaf person has to look up and keep looking up and still have ambition and still have motivation. Deaf black people can be successful as an actor or in another profession, as a cop or whatever, whatever your dream is. You can do it, period. Whatever you might hear that you can or can't, or the rules or the policies or this, you can do it.
Amen.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, maybe listening on WXXI or WEOS or WRUR, you can follow along with us on the WXXI News Facebook page with Facebook Live with captions if you want to follow the program here as we talk about this historic production of Fences. The debuts tonight on the Panera Theater stage at RIT at 7:30.
Yes,
got
yes.
the right time.
Yeah,
and
do.
Before the end of the hour, we'll tell you all of the show times. You've got several chances to see it over the next few days. Gigi Gaynor has the speaker role for Rose, and it's great to have you here, Gigi. First of all, I'll ask you to get right on that microphone if you could. Thank you for being here. And we've talked a little bit about Rose. Your director's talked about Rose,
right.
But this is an important sort of emotional gel to the family. But life's not always easy for Rose. How do you view Rose as a character here?
I have deep connections with Rose because of personal experiences.
And do me a favor, Gigi, get right on that mic so we can hear you. Yeah, there you go.
I've had deep connections with Rose because of personal experiences. Her wanting her son to do well and be connected to his father, and wanting the father to acknowledge that his son loves him and is working hard for him. I feel like Corey wants to help his father's dream come to reality, but his father just takes it as, not now. It can't happen for you because it didn't happen for me. But Corey just keeps fighting and saying, I'm here, Dad, and asking questions. And having sons, it's a real eye-opener to the side of being a young man and needing that father figure to connect with. As a mother, you take full advantage of being a mother and working in that flow. So I understood why Rose made the connection she made and still stood despite everything, because her goal was to maintain her family.
There are some overt lines in the script about what the fence means.
Correct.
And why Rose wants it. But there's also debate among critics and theater goers about the full meaning of the title Fences. What does it mean to you?
Fences to me means working together collaboratively to connect with your situation and separating at the same time the things that don't benefit you. So each slat of the fence has its own set of memories. Like, this piece is from Troy and that piece is from Corey, and that's the day Bono came to help. While Bono acknowledges that some people build fences to keep people out while other people build fences to keep people in, I think Rose not only wanted the fence to connect with her family, but it also having her husband work with her son to get it done meant that he was being forced to bond with his son. It didn't go exactly how she planned, but it still gave them time to connect because Troy was disconnected with what his son needed. He looked at his son and said, he's healthy. He's strong. I gave him everything he has. I gave him his eyes, his ears. That's from me. It's my blood, sweat, and tears that poured into it. But his son was searching for a connection, and Rose tried to give it to him by encouraging him to build that fence.
In some ways, Fences is a period piece set in the 1950s at a time where Troy is reflecting on a life where, you know, he had to play in the Negro Leagues, couldn't play in the major leagues. And so in one sense, you could think of this as a period piece, but how much of this still feels very raw to you today?
Interesting. When I first started working with Fences, I was connected with Christopher Cole, the assistant director, and he said, Gigi, come out. And I said, well, I'll come out to help. I didn't come out to act. I just came out to assist. And I accidentally read the script, a scene from the script. Luann heard me, and she said, nope, you're going to work with us. So at this point in my life, my own son was in the process of being recruited for football. So as I was traveling around the country looking at schools for him to go to, I came into a situation where I had to say over and over, it's an honor to be recruited. I own that because of my son being recruited. I was able to connect with that, but also see the barriers that Black men face while they're trying to be athletes, to be students, and connect with their manhood and have to balance that out. So that's where it is for me.
Well, I'm going to try to sneak in one short phone call from Caleb calling from Pittsford, who's got a question for the people on the panel here. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. I have seen many of the productions that these people have done, and they're always amazing. Just wondering what some things have been that have been wonderful along the way and challenging, and how did you overcome them?
It's a great question.
That is a great question.
You want me to repeat it? He's asking what was something that was challenging that came up during the production, and how did you overcome it? I'm going to turn to the cast for this because Luann gave us some of her thoughts on this, but Acyon, what stands out to you?
I knew he was going to ask me. I knew it.
Do you want me to turn to Marquand?
I answered. The most challenging thing, honestly, the time. The time was challenging. I was in the process of working on something else with my sister, Grace Flores. So I needed... Troy had a lot of lines. Troy talks too much, so it was a lot for me to try and memorize. And of course, as I said, I don't know how to sign, so I'm working with this gentleman here trying to figure out his timing. So that was the most challenging part, really trying to buckle down and capture the true emotion of how it felt for Troy. So as I said, I think it's working out great, but that, man, it was hard, man.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Gigi, do you sign?
I do not sign.
Okay. And so how did you kind of overcome that?
For me, not signing but working with a deaf cast meant I had to let go of perceptions. I had to open my eyes to who I am as a person. Like, I naturally speak with my hands. I say everything with my hands. So I had to remind myself to put my hands down because to a deaf person, anything I did with my hands could have meant something. So I was constantly saying okay and doing right because those are the signs that I knew. As the production has gone on, I've been able to connect a lot of signs with my signing partner, Tonique Hunter. And when she signs, she's patient with me. I feel like I have a language barrier. I've been immersed in the world of deaf culture, and as a hearing person, you walk down the street or walk down the hall and you say hello. Well, if the person that's walking down the hall towards you does not speak or hear, did they hear me? So I have to make a conscious effort to slow down, to acknowledge them. Mm-hmm. So that for me was a big thing. So integrating that into where I am, I was totally, totally stunned. But the biggest challenge for me, I'd have to say, was Rose goes through a myriad of emotions. She has her highs and she has her lows. She's loving. She's sympathetic to her brother-in-law. She's mm-hmm. doing all these things. But my personality is an alpha, so I'm already going hard. So I had to learn to balance my connection with where she was in the script and not take it to the place that I'm comfortable, but follow it where it led.
No, it sounds like they are ready for you tonight. 7:30 at the Panera Theater stage at the Lyndon Baines Johnson Hall on the RIT campus. And then real quick, Luann, what else can you see? Fences.
Tonight, 7:30. Friday, 7:30. Saturday, 7:30. And Sunday at 2.
I want to thank everyone in this studio and
thank
wish you,
you
luck.
For having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much.
You just heard Luann Haggerty, and I'll just mention everyone here from the cast and interpreting: Asian Owens, Marquan Holmes, Malik Paris, Gigi Gaino, Danica Zielinski. Thanks to all of you. Producing and creating the show today: Jason Milton, directing; Rob Braden, engineer; Fritz Lang, the volunteer; Juan Vasquez, Randy Gorbin, Denise Young, helping out on Facebook Live. And the outstanding producer is Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. If you see Fences, tell us what you think, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.